Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited that you're here today. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty.
And usually we remember our cues most of the time.
I got my name.
If you guys are watching the YouTube channel, Marty's sitting outside at her pool and we're all super jealous of her. We have a great topic today. This is something that I think a lot of people are going to find very interesting. There's enormous amounts of conversation about brachycephalic dogs. Are they inherently unhealthy, or are they healthy dogs that can have brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome? I did it. BOAS.
Yay. Good job.
And so the great news is that there is a new test for this particular disorder in our brachycephalic friends. And so we wanted to talk about this, both the concept of what it is and how testing can help your dog, your life, make great decisions about where to source a brachycephalic dog, all that sort of stuff. So let's hit it, Marty. I love this.
Okay, so we'll start off with what brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome is. And it's basically in the brachycephalic dogs, which are any of them with a shorter face, that's what happens when their nose is shortened, but all the inside parts didn't shorten. So that means that they have obstructive airway, sort of like when people have sleep apnea. It's sort of that same kind of syndrome that things don't work in the airway the way that they should. So some of these dogs have more narrowed nostrils. Some of them have more narrowed pathways from the nostrils into the sinuses and into the back of the throat. Some of them have a palate that's too long. So the soft palate is the roof of the mouth behind the hard palate. The hard palate is the hard part of your upper roof of your mouth. But if you feel further back, you can feel that there's a soft palate. Well, that should just sort of barely touch the epiglottis, which is the little flap that closes when you eat and drink and swallow so that air goes down the airway and food goes down the esophagus.
Right.
But if they do more than touch, if they overlap significantly, then that can cause some problems. And then secondary to that, because they have increased respiratory effort to breathe, then saccules form inside the larynx. And sometimes the larynx collapses because of that extra effort and that chronic suctioning in of all those airways that eventually those soft tissues get sort of flabby and weak, and so it creates progressively severe airway problem. So what's interesting is that there are normal brachycephalic dogs out there.
Right. So that was where I was going to go, and I think it's really, really important for people to hear this. Brachycephalic does not equal unhealthy, full stop. There are problems that come with brachycephalic breeds that are not thoughtfully bred. So I think that is just really critical to make a big hard line in the sand.
Right. So a brachycephalic dog is any dog with a shortened muzzle. That may be a pug, a French bulldog, a bulldog, but it includes Cavaliers. It includes the American bullies and the bulldogs.
Chihuahuas.
The old English bulldogs aren't quite Chihuahuas, Cavaliers. I mean, there's a lot of dogs, Shih Tzus, Lhasas, anything that has that cute little shortened face that a lot of people find appealing because it has this more infantile kind of look, more pronounced sort of rounder eyes, a shorter nose. It's sort of the quintessential opposite of the collie, which has tiny
more
eyes
human.
And a bit long.
I was involved in pugs. And when you talk about go back into the history of the pug dog, which is ancient and has looked basically like it looks for thousands of years, they wanted a dog that appeared more human. And that was the concept.
Right.
That they created in China.
Right. That infantile human-esque face is very appealing to certain people. I personally, I don't like the brachycephalic look, but I'll tell you, there's some breeds out there that are just like the French Bulldog just cracks me up. They're so funny and so fun.
I love my pug dogs. They never have a bad day. They are always happy and they make you laugh every single day. Truly, pug dogs were just a joy. And I had them in my life for 20 years. It's the first time I've been without one for the last couple of years. It's the first time I've been without one since, I don't know, 25 years.
But you still have a brachycephalic in your life. So I think it's really important that people understand where this is coming from and that we're not in any way making negative comments about the breed, but that it's just something that has been developed because that's the appeal that people like. Now, along with that, there are rotated teeth, and their teeth didn't get proportionally smaller than their jaw. So it's crowded, it's rotated. Sometimes they don't have them all. And in addition to respiratory issues like sleep apnea, kind of respiratory issues, they also have a lot of GI issues. So their intestine, their stomach and their esophagus don't work like other breeds. And I think
I'm
that's
say
really
can have, don't necessarily have, because I never had any GI problems with any of the bugs we had. Food was their life.
Not all. And, right. But it doesn't mean that they don't like food. It's just that they tend to have hiatal hernias and they also tend to not have normal swallowing effects. So their esophagus doesn't always work the same way as everything else. And that's what they found out when they did this brachycephalic study that they did at Cambridge in England to develop the BOAS test, was they were doing fluoroscopy on these dogs and they could see boluses of food or water that would go down part of the way into the stomach and then come back up and go back and forth and back and forth. And these dogs would aspirate. And some of them were absolutely asymptomatic. They never vomited. They never regurgitated. They never acted like they had a problem. But they were actually aspirating it and sort of desensitized to that they were aspirating. So this is another concern that we really have to address is how do we feed these dogs? How do we give these dogs water? How do we do all the normal necessary care so that if we do have a dog with those additional concerns, that we are appropriately addressing it? So there's some really important things that come into play here.
Well, and I think the thing that is to me so exciting is that study that you're talking about in Cambridge, when they came out with the results of that study, what they created was a scoring system and a test that your brachycephalic dog of, I think they started with pugs, bulldogs, French bulldogs, maybe Pekingese. I can't remember exactly.
That's it.
Just the three?
Just three right now.
Okay.
Yep. Hopefully those are the only three that have been studied
at Cambridge. Okay. I am hopeful that that will continue to expand. But at this time, there is a test that can be conducted by specialized and specially trained veterinarians that can score your dog, the parents, if you are looking for a puppy, that tells you quite empirically, right, with evidence, the condition of your exact pet or the parents of the puppy you're considering. And I think that that is such an amazing opportunity to make sure that we're always breeding the healthiest of these brachycephalic dogs so that they can live to 15 like mine all did, right?
Right. And I think that's really important is that Cambridge hasn't released this out on other breeds because they haven't done the additional studies. So they're not just looking at the dogs for what they've established for the testing. They're actually doing additional screening, like how well do they oxygenate the blood? How well do they swallow? All those things are playing a role in how they're making these determinations. So I think that's really important. And when I walk into the exam room and I can't hear the client talking to me and they can't hear me over the dog breathing, that's a big concern. That's really an indication that we have a big issue here. And there are quiet dogs. There are quiet pugs, Frenchies, bulldogs, all the brachies. There are quiet individuals in those breeds. There are dogs that live to be, we took care of a bulldog that lived to be 15 and a little bit more. You know, they can have really good quality of life with the right breeding screening, but you have to be careful. So you can't just go out and pick up the first cute little French bulldog that you found listed that you found on whatever source you found. You really need to be selective about where the parents screened. And I want to be really clear about this. This is a phenotype test, not a genotype test. So a genotype test is the kind that you take a cheek swab and they do DNA on it, and then they can tell you what the dog's parents carry genetically. This is a phenotype test, like hips, like elbows, like eyes, like hearts, like a lot of the other tests that we have for dogs. It's phenotype. So it's an assessment of a particular trait that we can assess. So right now there are about 30 veterinarians as of, well, there were 29 as of August of this year, but the Therio conference had a training session. So there will be a few more being added.
Good.
So any veterinarian can't just say, I'm going to start BOAS testing. Right. You have to be specially trained by one of the other people who has been trained by the people from Cambridge. And so it's very clear how the testing is done. I had the privilege of being at the French Bulldog National last September, and I got to see 40 little adorable Frenchies slash, we did some Bostons, even though Boston Terriers technically aren't in that group. They were still there for the testing and they're wanting to be added. So these are breeders who are really responsible, really want to make sure that the quality of dog that they're producing meets your expectations. So those are the people you need to go to. So right now there's only 30 veterinarians in the country. That means less than one per state. So if you're going to look for a dog that has been screened, you're going to have to look a little bit because they're not going to be just popping out of everywhere. They have to be specially trained and specially screened. And that's all really good news because now we know that they're doing the test correctly.
And I have always said, having, like I said, been pretty deeply involved in pug dogs and, you know, so around a lot of brachycephalic breeds, I've always said that breeding dogs carefully is really important. But there's just a lot less room for error with the brachycephalic breeds. Like, you really have to pay attention to make sure that the dogs are bred to be healthy, to be able to function in a completely normal way, which you can do and is done all the time. But you have to know that that's an option and you have to look for that option. And I love that the BOAS testing now has, like I said, an empirical evidence way to show people, to prove that the dogs they're working with are healthy.
Right. So it's not just randomly done. So can you still have a puppy that's affected even if the parents were normal? You can, but the more careful you are, the better it goes. So, and if you're looking at buying a French Bulldog or whatever breed it happens to be, you should not be just looking at BOAS testing. You should be looking at hips and, you know, DNA and all the things. There's right now DNA tests that check for 350 diseases, even though probably 340 of them don't occur. They're still testing for those things. So it's important that you understand how to interpret the DNA tests and understand how to interpret the BOAS testing. Mm-hmm. So educate yourself or talk to a breeder that understands this. Now, currently, there are only, of all the French Bulldog breeders in the country, only 3% of them are members of their national Bulldog club. And that's sort of profoundly disappointing that that means 97% of them are, they're just doing their own thing. So I think it's really important if you're looking for a quality dog, even if it's not intended to be used as show, that you understand the importance of finding a quality breeder that knows their breed, understands the testing, understands what to do, raises the puppies correctly. I mean, there's so many aspects to this. I have a friend with farm dogs and she said, I charge $3,000 for my puppies because you are getting a puppy that is selected for their genetics, probably imported from another country, tested for all the DNA, shown to a quality breeding program, all this stuff raised correctly. I whelped it in my bedroom. I've raised the puppies correctly. I've socialized them. I've taken them in the car. I've done all this stuff. So you're getting your puppy for free. You're paying $3,000 for all the background stuff that it took for me to get you to this point. And I think that's a really interesting
I like that perspective a lot. I really do. And I think
because a lot of people don't appreciate it.
No, they don't.
And they don't appreciate how hard it is.
Yeah, I think you're right, Marty. And, you know, it makes me think about, you know, we're talking specifically brachycephalic breeds, the Bulldog Club of America. So I think Marty and I have talked to you guys about selecting, you know, your new pet and the ways to find a well-bred, thoughtfully, responsively bred pet. The Bulldog Club of America, so belonging to a parent club is one of the things, not exclusive, but it's one of the things that you might check for. The Bulldog Club of America has their Champions of Health program, and it is specifically designed to encourage breeders to conduct all of the health testing, including the BOAS test. And so you're able to go to their website, the Bulldog Club of America. Just put it in your Google search. Bulldog Club of America has, it lists the names of the dogs that have participated. So when you talk to a breeder, you are armed with actual empirical knowledge that is so important when you're making a decision about a dog that you're going to live with for hopefully 12 to 15 years. And as I said, when the brachycephalic breeds go bad, Marty was talking about all the problems with Boaz. When they go bad, it's expensive. It's not an inexpensive procedure.
No. And unfortunately, there's a lot of veterinarians who do surgery to correct part of this. But for one thing, you can't fix everything. For instance, the hypoplastic trachea where the trachea is too narrow, that doesn't have a surgical repair. Another is that nares, the little nostrils, they're sometimes narrow and you can trim a little bit of that skin off the outside to make it a little wider, but you can't correct what's happening up in the nasal passages. And as this has evolved, there's some very sophisticated techniques surgically that veterinary surgeons are doing to correct this. It's not just going in and shortening off the palate, because that in and of itself doesn't fix the saccules, fix the other stuff. So there's certain things we can't fix, certain things that have a better sort of surgical intervention for than your regular veterinary clinic can do that just goes in and takes a little piece off. So I think it's important that if you do have a dog with brachycephalic airway syndrome, that you talk to your veterinarian. Do they have 24-hour nursing care for post-op care? Do they understand the most important part of these new techniques? Can you see a surgeon? Can I go to a board-certified surgeon? And this is where, as soon as you get your puppy, really seriously, if you have a brachycephalic, seriously look at getting insurance the instant you get that puppy. And I know one of our
programs before you actually leave the breeder, you know, we have lots of resources for you guys. Trupanion's a spectacular one. But if you insure your puppy before it has left the breeder, it has no pre-existing conditions.
Yep.
And that is where most pet health insurance will run into trouble. If you have a puppy or a young adult dog that you insured after it left the breeder, there's no way that you can be sure it has no pre-existing conditions. And then your costs are going to skyrocket. So insure that puppy the minute it leaves the breeder. If they don't offer Trupanion, ask them for it or contact Trupanion directly.
Right. So kind of get your act together before you pick up that adorable little bundle and trot out the door, because invariably something is going to go wrong at least a percentage of the time. I've had clients that, you know, sell a puppy and there was a car accident on the way home from picking the puppy, and the puppy disappeared and ended up in the marsh, and, you know, all the stories. So don't let that happen to you. Just plan ahead. And you think, you know, you say, well, you know, I'm not going to get insurance. It's expensive. I'm just going to put $10 a week or $100 a month or whatever into a savings account. And then if I have a problem, I'm self-insured. Well, the reality is that most of us never actually do that. So really seriously consider the insurance if you're getting a brachycephalic, because, I mean, you may pay a little bit of a higher premium because they know they're brachycephalic. Newsflash, they already know that. But you do have the protection then of having that insurance. So I think it's a good idea. And I don't want to turn this only into an insurance discussion, but
it is a worthwhile consideration. And you and I, Marty, have talked about the expenses of veterinary care in today's world. And I mean, there is a conversation to be had about which came first, chicken or the egg, in terms of, did veterinary care get more expensive because now there's insurance available? Or did we have insurance become a thing because, you know, veterinary care became more expensive? Right. No matter what, we have more abilities, more tests that we can run, more machines, more all that stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So don't take a chance on it. I had a client with a wonderfully little French bulldog. He fell down a flight of stairs, broke his elbow. You know, it had nothing to do with the fact he was brachycephalic. It had everything to do with he was up ramming around in the middle of the night and missed the step and took a tumble. So it doesn't matter if you're brachycephalic or not. You still have other things that can happen to you. So, you know, just don't see any reason to take a chance on it. Just go ahead and bite the bullet and do the insurance thing and be on your way.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
So, the brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome test. Should we discuss that a little bit, how that's
Yeah,
done?
I really want to help people understand, like, how do you test for this? And right when this first came and was introduced to the United States, I interviewed the people who were the first veterinarians that were doing it, along with Eddie Zook at the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals, that will be recording those test scores. And so I had the same question, like, how do you test for this, right?
Right.
It's amazing. So please share that, because from a veterinarian perspective, I think it's really important for people to understand what they are testing for and what they can see.
Sure. So it's essentially not a very sophisticated test from the basis of the equipment that you need. We don't need a special machine. We need a stethoscope and our ears and some good common sense. So it's basically, we listen to the dog's chest to see if there's a heart murmur, which has nothing to do with brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome, other than to say, you want to make sure the dog doesn't have a murmur. And so you listen to their, and then you listen, you put a stethoscope right on their voice box, their larynx, and you listen to them at rest. And then you have a little chart showing all these different kinds of nostrils based on the kind of breed. And so you score the width of the nostrils, you listen to the throat when the dog is breathing, and then you take the dog off of the table and you have someone, the owner or a vet student or whoever happens to be there, walk the dog around for 3 minutes in the environment. And then you put the dog back on the table and immediately you listen again with and without your stethoscope to see how much noise the dog is making when they breathe. So it's a comparison in one way to what they were doing at that level of exercise. And in another way, it's just a straight up, if it's really loud, then you need to score it as a 3 rather than a 0, which is absolutely silent. And then there's a 1 and 2 in between, depending on the severity of the symptoms. Now, there are some kind of cool things. There's now Bluetooth stethoscopes. So for people that have hearing loss, if they're older veterinarians, they can have it Bluetooth to their hearing aids.
Or
you can Bluetooth it and either record it or someone else can hear, so that if you're the owner of the dog and you're saying, well, you know, can I listen with your stethoscope? Yes, you can do that. Or you can just Bluetooth it. And then you can share that with a phone, with earbuds, with other kind of listening devices. So it's kind of interesting. You know, if a client has a dog with a heart murmur, I like to have them hear it. And I think that's important for this as well, because people have a better understanding if they can actually hear what you're hearing and not just have you say, oh, yeah, this is a 3. Well, you know, if it's a 3, again, you probably can't talk over the dog because the dog is making so much noise when they breathe. Right. But we want to be really transparent in how this is done. And nobody's out to get anybody. Nobody's going to just give dogs 3s because they don't want to have a bulldog in a breeding program. They're actually trying to do their very best to help you and say, okay, if you have a 0 or a 1, and OFA has a pretty specific chart. It's got green, yellow, and red on it. You can go to their OFA BOAS website. You can see it. And so essentially you want to breed the quietest dogs to the quietest dogs, hoping that therefore we get the quietest puppies. Now, just like with hips, you can breed 2 excellent dogs together and still have things that don't go the way they're supposed to. And you can breed 2 crummy dogs together and get good hips. But odds are better when you breed good genetics to good genetics.
And
so
I think
it's important.
It's also important to remember the BOAS testing was only made available in the United States starting in 2022, 23.
Yeah.
It's very really recent. So people have not yet been able to, in many cases, supremely incorporate that information into their breeding programs.
Right. And I have a Labrador breeder as a client. He's been breeding field trial labs for decades, literally decades. And I remember him speaking at a Ducks Unlimited conference that I was at. And he's so funny because I've heard him say this 1,000 times. So he says, people come up to me and say, so Dougie, where do I get a good dog? And Dougie says to them, good dogs come from good dogs. Okay, doesn't that just summarize everything we know about breeding dogs? Mm-hmm. If you breed good dogs to good dogs, aren't you more likely to get healthy dogs that have good temperaments and good longevity and good health screening and good health scores? I mean, let's get right down to it. You can't take something from the bottom of the barrel and expect that you're going to breed some glorious dog out of something that doesn't start with good genetics.
Right.
I'm very lucky. I had parents with decent genetics. I mean, my mom had hip dysplasia. My dad had allergies, but I didn't get either of those. So kind of got lucky.
My parents should not have been bred, and I am spay for pet quality, man. I mean, it's just, I think that, you know, when we're talking about where you go to buy your dog and how important health testing is, that's something that is important to remember. Mother Nature is, as we say,
cruel.
A biatch. And
yes, she is.
Just like people are not inbred or anything like that. And we all have, there's eyes and hips and backs and guts and autoimmune and all the things. Breeders who are doing this thoughtfully and responsibly can do everything and sell their left kidney to make sure that their puppies are healthy. And Mother Nature will say, yo,
just kidding.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. So there are times, but then, you know, we've all seen a couple that's very attractive, a very attractive woman, a very attractive man. And then you look at their child and you look at him and go, how did that happen?
I used to see it in reverse. And this is terrible. I'm not going to say some of the things that I was going to say, but where I went to college, in this particular area, there were a lot of sort of plain looking parents. And I mean to tell you, drop dead gorgeous children. Like, how did that come from that? I have no idea.
Right. So sometimes Mother Nature is kind, but
and
not
sometimes
always.
Sometimes she's not.
But you do your very best as a breeder to give people the best puppies that they can have. And you do your very best as someone who's purchasing a puppy to get the best puppy that you can.
Right.
So saving a couple hundred dollars on the purchase of a puppy doesn't really end up.
We're not. I know people who are spending more money. And I know that we need to be a little bit, you know, gentle around some of these topics. But I'm going to say this. Remember, we want you to be successful. We want you to have a happy and healthy dog. So these are the reasons we're saying these things to you, not to be mean to anybody, not to pick on anybody. But I will tell you that the breeders, the 3% of French Bulldog breeders who are members of the French Bulldog Club of America and are testing their dogs in BOAS do not have French Bulldogs that do not meet the French Bulldog standard.
Right. And standard isn't just about how cute you are, how you look. It's really about function. It's about form. It's about all the things that, for a good reason, breeders have established a standard. There are standards even for non-AKC dogs. So, you know, you need to look at that. You need to look at the health screenings. Ask the hard questions of the people who you're buying a puppy from. If it's a white dog, ask if they're bear tested. That checks for hearing. If it's a large breed dog, ask if they've done their hip x-rays. Do all the right stuff. Screen carefully because this is an important decision. This is a dog you're going to live with, for, like you said, for 12 to 15 years. And we want them to be as healthy as they possibly can be. So nobody wants to breed a dog that has a health issue. But frankly, no matter how hard you try, sometimes it turns out that way. You know, breeders try to do their very best to stand behind their dogs. There are no
promises. I would say responsible breeders do.
Yes.
And again, I mean, this is a conversation we've had here on this podcast. We've had it many times on Pure Dog Talk. The reality check is that in life, in dogs, and in every other situation, there's bad apples in every basket. And it's just reality. And so for you as a consumer, your best safety check is to go well informed and well educated about the breed of your choice. And if the breed of your choice is brachycephalic, you need to do like three times more information. I'm sorry, but that's just reality.
Right.
Just like
right.
The breeders that are doing the work responsibly, I believe, work three times harder than breeders in any other breed. I really sincerely believe that. I know an awful lot of people in pugs and in these other breeds, and they are just working overtime trying to make healthy dogs that meet a particular standard of appearance and structure and form and function and all of those things. But think about it. The pug dog was bred to ride on the chariots in China. Not run beside them.
Right. That's a Dalmatian. Yeah.
Right.
If you want a Dalmatian, get a Dalmatian.
Get a Dalmatian.
If you want a pug, get a pug. Cool.
I think that that is one of the things I feel so strongly about when people are like, I want a dog that looks like such and such, but I don't want it to have this problem. I'm like, well, then don't get that dog. You want a different dog.
Right.
And so helping people work through those conversations in their household, I think, is super important.
Mm-hmm. So. And it's good to ask the hard questions of the breeder. And if they're uncomfortable answering your questions, then You can look on.
That's not the right breeder for you.
Yeah.
There will be another breeder. There will be another puppy. Don't jump at the first puppy that you have an opportunity to get, because that may not be your best choice. I have people that they say they want one of my dogs, and then I put them on my waiting list, and by the time we call them back and say we've got a puppy, they're like, oh, yeah, I changed my mind and I got something else. That's not a good way to develop a relationship with a breeder. It may take you 2 years to get a puppy from somebody that's doing a great job breeding, but be patient. Remember when pet stores were at the mall and there were those spontaneous decisions that people were making? You know,
and they still do. That's not still a thing.
It's not the way to pick your next dog. So be careful. There's some really good materials out there on the AKC website. Talk to your veterinarian. Your veterinarian knows you. Get in there, make an appointment without a dog. Trot your little self in there and make an appointment and say, I'd like to talk to you about the next dog that I want to purchase. Will you help me pick out the right breed? Will you help me pick out the right individual? And I think that's really important. If your last dog had something that you don't want to deal with again, talk to the breeder and say, my last dog had XYZ disease and I cannot live through that again. Please tell me that you don't have XYZ disease in your line. And I think those are really honest conversations to have with your vet, with your breeder, with all the right people, because you can do a great job of selecting the dog. So I think we have a lot of opportunity here, and this is just one tiny little aspect, but a very important one, because breathing's kind of a big deal. You've got to breathe.
Breathing's important. I guess my biggest thing is to understand and appreciate what the breeds were, what they were designed for, and don't expect a Dalmatian if you decide to have a pug dog. Just not a thing.
Right.
So, all right, you guys. Thank you all so much for listening. Marty, thank you for helping us work through the brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome. I can do this.
BOAS. BOAS for short.
Yeah.
There's a reason to call it BOAS.
And again, the importance of looking for dogs that are tested for this particular situation, I think, is really important. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate everybody stopping by tonight. Marty, thank you for joining us. Always appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.